Welcome, Dumbheads, to this week's Megasode of MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. Monday through Saturday, I drop one episode per day, identifying the dumbest thing on every single goddamn page of Heroes Unlimited, the gloriously ramshackle superhero RPG from Palladium Books. On Sundays, I combine all the week's previous episodes in one Megasode, like this one. If you'd like to play along at home, we're reading Heroes Unlimited Revised 2nd Edition, 2nd Printing, from December 1998. Today we're discussing page 306 of Heroes Unlimited. We're still in the psionic powers section. We're of course discussing the many, many psionic powers that you can have to help your character or to help the GM. You know, if you're feeling generous, why not pick a power like the one from today, clairvoyance, that is no goddamn good to you or to the party, but is useful to the GM to tell their preordained story. As you may have guessed, clairvoyance is the dumbest thing on this page, and It's a tale as old as time in role-playing. We have a genre trope, which is the psychic character who gets flashes, you know, visions, and it's like, oh, we have to go help the blah, blah, blah. Some lady is in trouble. It's time for five burly men to convene on her location and have a fight with a bad guy. That's a genre trope so strong you can't fight it. It has to be in your superhero game, which has psychics in it. But the question for the GM is, if the players have the ability to gain information, then they might decide how to approach their world and their place in it. This might cause them to intervene in my story, right? This might cause the players to interfere in the story I'm unfolding to them, unfurling upon them, thrusting at them repeatedly. And we can't have that, right? We open that can of worms, and pretty soon, this story is about the players, rather than, you know, the bad guy and this lady he's menacing. So we really got to put a lid on the clairvoyance power. We have to not just put one lid on it, but like multiple locks and chains. This is like a Houdini, like when they drop the guy into the water tank and there's like so many chains on there, like almost a parody of an escape act. That's how bound up clairvoyance is. Let me just tell you what this power does or doesn't do. Here's the basic description. Quote, clairvoyance enables the psychic to see or feel glimpses of the possible future. This is achieved through meditation or intense concentration in which the clairvoyant thinks about a particular person, event, or place. And then the description goes on to tell us what happens in a clairvoyant trance. Quote, the message can be a sudden feeling that somebody is in need, or more often, a sudden flash of insight, a sudden image that races through the mind. We've actually discussed this power before, back in the episode about the she pronoun, way back in the special training section. This is the one with this woman named Janet, who is being menaced by either muggers or maybe a horse. That's how vague these visions are. But many game systems feel comfortable just letting that vagueness be the limiting factor on a power like clairvoyance. You know, you've got something like fortune telling or augury or whatever, and the description will just say, you use this power, you burn some incense, bing, bang, boom, you've got a vision of the future, but it's as vague as it needs to be for the GM not to be screwed by, you know, future knowledge or knowledge the players aren't supposed to have. And that's here. I mean, make no mistake, the fact that for all we know, Janet could secretly be a werehorse, like this is real vague, but that's not enough for Heroes Unlimited. We need multiple limits on what this power can do. So first of all, there's the basic one for a psychic power, right? This costs 4 internal strength points, which is not nothing. Like Mind Block, which is also on this page, is an indispensable utility psychic power. It costs 4 ISP per use. So you have to expend a limited resource. But you don't just get to spend the points. You spend the points to get in the door. This is where your troubles begin when you spend your 4 internal strength points. Now you've got to make a base skill roll. Unlike other psychic powers, this has a percentile attached to it. It's 58% plus 2% per level of experience, which means that as a starting psychic, you only 6 out of 10 times that you try to use this power will anything happen other than spending internal strength points. So first of all, you spend your money, your internal strength points, your limited resource, then you roll a percentile, and if you're lucky, like 6 times out of 10, something will happen. Now, you're limited to attempting this 2 times per day. So not only do you spend a limited resource, and not only do you have almost a 50-50 chance of it failing on you outright, but you can only attempt it twice per day. Now, this trance takes 6d6 melee rounds for you to see whatever vague bullshit the GM wants to feed you. If during that time you are interrupted, if you do anything, the vision immediately ends. Points spent, chance wasted. But let's assume everything goes right. Let's assume that you've secured yourself in a safe location. You're not going to be interrupted. You've lit some candles. You know, maybe you're in the bathtub. You got some whale sounds on. You know, some good psychic bullshit. You've really, like, everything that contributes to good clairvoyance. You've got your clairvoyance support tea next to you. You're really going to make a go of this. So you're secure. You're not interrupted. You've got all the time you need. You spend your internal strength points. You make your roll. You make your percentile roll. You're lucky. You hit that 60% chance that anything happens other than a nice bath. Now you see some kind of a disjointed vision of the future. I'm sorry, did I say the future? Forgive me. What I meant is a future. One possible version of events that could happen. So what you might see, for example, is Janet screams, you hear a horse, people look horrified, there's a city street. First of all, you don't know what the fuck is going on. Secondly, you don't know where this is. Thirdly, the GM gets total control over which details you see. You choose a location or a person, but the GM decides everything about what you see. You don't know when this is going to happen, and you don't know this is going to happen at all. It is one possible version of the way events may transpire. So it could be right now, it could be something that already happened, it could be in the future, and if it's in the future, it may be that this cryptic bullshit, once you finally decode it, is something that will never happen at all. Now, as if that weren't enough, we've also got some GM guidance at the end of the power here. Quote, game masters, be careful not to reveal too much. Use the examples provided as a guide. Remember, these are brief glimpses of the possible future, not a motion picture. The psychic cannot engage in any actions, combat or otherwise, during a moment of clairvoyance, or the image will instantly stop. It usually requires 2d4 melee rounds of concentration or meditation before the image occurs. Remember, a failed skill roll means absolutely nothing happens, but still burns up the 4 ISP and time. It almost feels as though the author is getting at something here. And it becomes clear what that is on paragraph 3 of this power, the dumbest thing on this page, only because it tips the author's hand. It's a little on the nose. Quote, it is important to note that sometimes a clairvoyant image will occur unintentionally, without the psychic trying. These most often manifest themselves as dreams or nightmares during sleep. The clairvoyant dream is exactly like the image from a meditative trance described previously. The precognitive flash of the future may also occur unbeckoned while awake, but this is extremely rare. These brief glimpses of the possible future happen because the clairvoyant is acutely attuned to his world. Quote unquote, his world. This world belongs to somebody, but it's not fucking him. Anything that might hurt or change that world, including people and places, will often be foretold in a flash of insight. So in other words, if you take this power, you get to pay one of your psionic power selections, you get to pay 4 ISP every time you use it, you get to deal with a 40% failure rate, and you get to deal with having no control over what you see, essentially, and total uncertainty that what you see isn't bullshit, in exchange for what? Exactly what the GM wants you to know. And you are renting out space in your big psionic brain for the GM anytime he or she is too lazy to have a decent plot hook to just grab your character by the frontal lobe and show you a little mini movie of what the plot is. Any time or place. Like, you can do it at night, give you a nightmare, or just while you're awake. If the GM can't find an appropriate time that you're sleeping to hit you with a plot hook, you just fucking zone out. You just go AFK for a minute and just watch a cutscene of the GM telling you where the plot is, where you're supposed to go. But when you decide that you'd like to know something, it's just fucking squealing horses and streets at midnight and your friend Janet being chased by anti-horse villagers or something. The dumbest thing about this power is that it's not really a power, it's a plot device. And if you want to have a plot device, that's fine. But a smart player would never take this power. Because like many other powers like this in many, many role-playing systems, this power is a lie, this power is a trap. You're going to know exactly what the GM wants you to know to make the story work. All this power does, all you get for choosing this power instead of, you know, astral projection or see aura or telepathy or something useful, the only thing you get for making this selection is a useless reskin on the same thing the GM was going to do anyway, which is make sure you know Janet's in trouble because he's got nothing fucking planned for this Thursday night of gaming if you guys don't know Janet's in trouble. And if you try to find out anything else about the situation using this power, the GM is under strict orders directly from the author to make sure you don't get shit. If you think you're going to get to Janet before she becomes a werehorse, you are sadly mistaken, my friend. I didn't write these werehorse stats for nothing. This is happening. Today we're discussing page 307 of Heroes Unlimited. We're still in the psionic abilities section. We're still discussing sensitive psionic abilities for the sensitive psychic. For the touchy-feely psychic who really likes to walk into a situation and put their fingers out there as though that's where their psychic powers are located and just sort of feel around and close their eyes and say, I sense a great evil, a great pain, a great something, different every day. I'm a great asset to the team. I can always tell what there is a great of in the room. And then the rest of you fuckheads just handle it. Like, that's my role. I'm a sensitive psychic. You know, and I tease, but I like this kind of character. I like the character who's about information. And some information gathering techniques are better than others. We're about to talk on tomorrow's page about a very good information gathering technique indeed. But on today's page, we have two options. It's a tale of two powers today. Two different ways to discover the same information, both kind of dumb in their own ways, but there's a clear winner. And the loser is a loser, I think, because the GM wants to exploit the vulnerable, sensitive psychic for plot purposes, which is not cool. Don't pick on the sensitive psychic. You know, it's like in a kindergarten class. There's going to be the kid who really likes to finger paint. There's going to be the little girl who not just cries, but weeps at the slightest provocation. Don't pick on those kids. They're going to have it hard enough in life. On this page, and I hate to say it, the author is picking on the sensitive kid, and that's not cool. Let me explain what I'm talking about. Let's say you and your super team have been chasing a ghost. You're up. You're the sensitive psychic. You're the kicker in this situation. Normally, you're not much use, but we've been chasing a ghost. We're in the room. Now we're calling in the sensitive psychic. Come on in. Limber up those fingers, tell us what there is a great of in this room. A great sadness, perhaps? Great power? Great power, never a good sign. Seems mean to say, but I'll take great sadness every time. That's a ghost you can negotiate with. So you get in there, and you're moving those fingers around, you're taking in the room, and what you find on a table in the middle of the room is what appears to be an ancient ceremonial dagger. And it's got like a little skull on it or something. Skull equals death equals ghost. Okay, there's a connection here. Could it be that this dagger is possessed? There are two powers on this page that could help you figure this out, one of which you should not use under any circumstances. First, let's talk about the good choice. There's a power on this page called Sea Aura. Now, Sea Aura, as veteran Vampire the Masquerade players will know, this is a power that will see no end of use. If you're playing, for example, a Toreador, the sensitive psychic of the vampire world, you're going to be able to use the Sea Aura ability in Vampire the Masquerade to constantly tell, like, what people's moods are, what their preferences are, what secret plans they might be hatching based on their emotional state. Is Sandy blood-bound to Vlad? Is Lord Imperius in a secret pseudo-sexual relationship with Monsieur Le Skullfuck? These are the kinds of questions you need answers to in a vampire campaign. You know, emotions, secrets, mindsets, all very important. And you can use this information really in any kind of campaign, even if it's a campaign that does not invite NPCs like Monsieur Le Skullfuck. You know, it's even better in a way. In a superhero game, oftentimes, the plot is built to be more resistant to like super strength, super speed, throwing around lightning bolts than it is to a deep interrogation of what people are up to, how they feel, what their relationships are. That kind of investigation often can really get you places. So Sea Aura, generally speaking, a great power. And the version here is not too bad, although there is a little strangeness at the end of the description. When you look at somebody's aura, costs 6 inner strength points, and it can do all of the following things. Tell you about what level they are, low, high, or medium. Good to know. Good to know if you're fighting in your weight class. You can sense the presence of magic. Not that you can do a tremendous amount about magic if you're a psychic character, but you can like write a referral. You can, you know, do your little psychic feely thing to the air and sense a great power. Then if you see it's magical, you can turn to the group and be like, this is not really my department, but I know a guy. Let me just scribble. Here, go see this wizard. You know, this calls for a different kind of spooky fingers from what I offer. You can detect the presence of psychic abilities, also how much potential psychic energy is in someone or something, whether someone is healthy or sick, the presence of a possessing entity. And then there's a weird one at the end. Quote, the presence of an unusual aberration, which indicates a serious illness, non-human, mutant, or supernatural being in disguise, but does not specify which. So sometimes you'll look at someone and they just strike you a little funny, like, oh, something's not right with that aura. Could be that's a vampire. Also could be an alien or could be cancer. So regardless, let's watch ourselves. Maybe you don't break out the stakes right away, because in terms of like prevalence in the general population, if we go in guns blazing, we're going to take out a lot of cancer patients before we slay our first vampire. But just like everybody be on their guard. But other than that little bit of ambiguity, Sea Aura, a very solid power. It's going to tell you really what you need to know. Is this my department? Is it psychic or magic? Is this in my weight class? And importantly, is there a being here? Is there a possessing entity here that we need to deal with? So returning to our hypothetical scenario, you could use See Aura on the ceremonial dagger and find out whether it's possessed by a ghost or not. Quick and easy, about 30 seconds of spooky fingers, you're done, you have the information you are seeking. Your other option is a power called Object Read, which started on the last page. Now, Object Read definitely has its uses. It's sort of like clairvoyance in that it can give you these like disjointed visions of various things happening in the world related to this object, either in the past or the present. It's going to give you the information the GM wants you to have, so it's a similar issue to clairvoyance, but it's not quite as thoroughly hampered. Like, the description just doesn't have quite the same emphasis on making sure you don't see anything if the GM doesn't want you to, so it's possibly a better way to gather information than clairvoyance. But what I want to talk about is one specific use of this power. It occurs when you use this power to gain impressions from an object. These are just little flashes of information you get. Things like, what was the alignment of the last owner? How are they feeling? What's this thing for? Has it been near magic recently? But there's more. Quote, Object Read will also conclusively indicate whether the item is currently enchanted or contains a supernatural force slash entity, as well as its alignment and emotions. If the item is possessed, an Object Read makes the reader totally vulnerable to possible psychic attack. No bonuses to save from the force contained inside it. So this is not a great test. This is more of like a witch trial style test, where you maybe think that the dagger is possessed, so you go ahead and use Object Read on it. If the dagger is not possessed, and you're way off base, then you just lose inner strength points and nothing happens. If it is possessed as you suspected, then now whatever is inside of it can possess you, and you get no bonus to save against it. You're totally vulnerable to being possessed yourself. The only time you'd want to use this power, then, is when you're very sure that something isn't possessed, in which case, why are you checking at all? In the scenario we're discussing, where you've got this, you know, ceremonial dagger, it's been helpfully labeled with a grim skull, so you know, nobody's been peeling potatoes with this thing. This is like a key item. This is a plot device. So, you know, you're approaching it cautiously. In this scenario, you would never use Object Read on an item like this, because if there's something inside it, then it's going to kick your ass. You're a sensitive psychic. You're not here to fight ghosts. You're here to make spooky fingers and find the ghost and then go run and hide behind the real superheroes. So you would never do this. You would never, if you know how your powers work at all, you would never Object Read a spooky skull knife. What you would Object Read is, for example, a potato peeler. For example, a regular, you know, dinner knife or steak knife or whatever, because you think it's a regular object that's just lying around, right? You go to the bad guy's house and he left his steak and his baked potato on the dining room table because he ran off in a hurry because the superheroes showed up and kicked his door down. And so you're like, oh, let me object read this steak knife and just see what happened to this guy. Like, let me see if I can get a visual on him or whatever. And in that scenario, if the GM has decided that, surprise, there's a ghost in the steak knife, now you're fucked. That's the situation where this total vulnerability comes into play. And that's really not playing fair, right? Like, this is the psychic equivalent of the thing in D&D where the totally innocuous object turns out to be a mimic with like no clues or foreshadowing at all, and it bites somebody's head off. It's just the GM fucking with you. Or like those little earworm monsters in D&D that like hide in the locks of doors. So if you try to listen at the door to see if there's a monster on the other side, then it like jumps in your ear and eats your brain in the first action. It's one of those dirty GM tricks. And that's bullshit no matter who you pull it on. But it's especially bullshit against the sensitive psychic. This hapless doof, this poor baby, out in the cold hard world of Heroes Unlimited, trying to fight crime and alien invaders and possessing ghosts and God knows what, with basically Commander Troy powers. Don't fucking kick the sensitive psychic while they're down like this, especially on their big day. You know what? It's finger painting day. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's your one chance to be useful. It's a possessing ghost. But we all know it happens all the time in stories like this. Finally, it's Commander Troy's chance to be useful. There's a fucking radioactive space ghost on the Enterprise possessing things. Or like that episode where Dr. Crusher had the sexy affair with the ancient Scottish ghost who fucked her grandma or whatever that episode is about. It's that episode. And finally, you'd think Troy would be useful. She walks into the room. Bam. First thing, possessed. She's become a threat to herself and everyone else. Once again, raising the issue of why they allow her anywhere near a starship. And that's what's going to happen to the sensitive psychic because of the way this power is written, because of this vulnerability built into Object Read, and because of the sadistic whims of the GM. So it's not cool. It's the dumbest thing on this page because it's like kind of a trap hidden in the power. You know, psionic characters don't get much. And so hiding time bombs in their powers, it's not nice. Be like a Toreador. Take See Aura. It's much the better option. Today we're discussing page 308 of Heroes Unlimited. We're in the psionic abilities section. We're just wrapping up the sensitive psionic powers. As we discussed yesterday, these are for sort of touchy-feely psychics, soft psychic skills psychics. It's for gathering information and, you know, being more in tune with your environment than other psychics. I don't mean to poo-poo these powers. These are useful powers. But they imply a certain kind of character. Now, yesterday I talked about the Commander Troy version of this character archetype. The I sense great blah 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 type of character. However, more broadly, characters who specialize in information or divination, that's a common mental powers trope, a common psionic trope, and there are lots of different ways to play it, right? Like, if you've ever played Dungeons & Dragons with somebody who specialized in divination, as a character, I mean, not that I haven't played with players who specialize in divination, I am from Northern California, but if you've played with somebody who plays a diviner, you'll know that there are lots of different ways to go about it. Like, some people are very scientific and strategic, and then other people want to play, you know, the flaky tarot card version of this. It's not always apparent in any given role-playing system what's the best way to play this, like, information specialist, psychic, sensitive, brain powers character. And oftentimes, as I think I may have alluded to last time, the version of this character that's actually most useful is the one that is least in tune with the game you're playing. So, like, if you're playing a superhero game where we're expecting lots of fisticuffs and jumping over skyscrapers and all that stuff, then being a character who specializes in understanding people's motives and feelings can actually be very powerful because plots and character defenses aren't really calibrated to defend against that, so you can kind of end run around a lot of problems that arise that you can't punch your way through. We see a similar thing on this page. And in fact, we see a combination of information gathering powers that are so amazingly good that I guess I have to say they're the dumbest thing on this page, even though they're a fantastic character option, because they betray a lack of foresight about how the realities of a Heroes Unlimited campaign will interact with these genre tropes of the psychic character. Let me get down to specifics. The bad power on this page, as far as I'm concerned, is Sixth Sense. You would think this would be a winner, right? Like, if you're playing a character who, you're a psionic, but you don't want to stand there touching your forehead, almost fainting all session, you want to be in the mix, right? You want to be hitting people with telekinesis. You would think that Sixth Sense is a great psychic sensitive power that you should take because it has combat applications. But in fact, the limitations on Sixth Sense are pretty rough. Quote, this power gives the psychic a precognitive flash of imminent danger to himself or somebody near him within 90 feet. The character will not know what the danger is or where it will come from, nor who it will be directed at when in a group. All he will know is that something life-threatening will happen within the next 60 seconds. The sixth sense is triggered automatically, without the consent of the psychic, whenever his life is in great peril, or the life of somebody he greatly cares about, friend, loved one, etc. Forgive my inflection there, that sentence ended unexpectedly. The sixth sense is only triggered by an unexpected life-threatening event, which is already set into motion, and will happen any second. And then it points out that if you're out of ISP, because every instance of this costs you 2 ISP, if you're out, then the power doesn't work. So this is like a lot of restrictions. This is not like Spider-Man's spider sense, which depending on the issue, it can be like, oh, my wife's about to spot me leaving a dirty dish in the sink, spider sense, save my ass. About to fill in the wrong bubble on my chemistry test, spider sense. This is much stricter than that. This is imminent, life-threatening danger that is already in motion and will occur within the next 60 seconds. So let's say that somebody has got into their head to fire a long-range missile at you. You pissed off the wrong robot. There's a missile coming your way. First of all, if the missile is already in the air but currently more than 90 feet away from you, no sixth sense. It only goes out 90 feet. Number two, if the missile is already in the air but isn't going to hit you for more than 1 minute, so it's, you know, 70 seconds away, no reaction. Sixth sense does not help you. If the missile doesn't do enough damage to gravely imperil your life, which is likely for a superhero, maybe not so likely for a psionic, but who knows, you took some physical skills. I mean, it's well known that it typically takes a few missiles to take down a trained boxer, so who's to say? If the missile isn't enough to gravely imperil your life, no sixth sense. What if this robot you pissed off hasn't fired the missile yet? He's just, you know, happens to be shopping at the same supermarket as you, and you're about to bump into him, like in the freezer section, and then he's going to throw down. Despite your psychic powers, you could walk right into his big metal chest before your sixth sense goes off, because there is not yet an in-motion threat to your life. So this is extremely narrow. This sixth sense goes off if and only if that missile is 90 feet away and in motion and about to hit you in the head. And in that scenario, Your sixth sense warns you about that missile that's in the air 90 feet away, costs you 2 inner strength points, and then gives you a +3 to dodge. A mere +3 to dodge. For protecting your friends, it's even worse, because it says here, quote, whenever his life is in great peril, or the life of somebody he greatly cares about, friend, loved one, etc. This is an awkward conversation to have with your teammates when you're doing like the tactical review of how we operate as a group. Like, okay, so I have sixth sense, so I can help protect us from surprise attacks. Yes, it does apply to the team, but not the whole team. Like, I have to like you. it's a difficult thing to broach, but like, I've prepared a list. These are the members of the superhero team who, my feeling is, I can't guarantee your safety from missiles. We're not in that place. I'm not trying to be a dick. I'm just being honest. If a missile were flying at the nuclear woman who has owed me $200 for 3 years now, if it hit her, would feel nothing, psychically or otherwise. And if we're going into battle, she needs to know that. So yeah, this is not a great investment. And in fact, the fact that it costs you ISP every time it goes off could even make it a liability, because like, it is only 2 inner strength points, but they're a fairly limited resource. And there's actually a note at the end of the power, quote, the character cannot be surprised by a sneak attack from behind. Now, on the upside, what this seems to indicate to me is your sixth sense, whatever its other requirements, whatever its other weird rules are, won't let you get punked out from behind. Maybe even if the attack isn't life-threatening. Maybe there's just a special provision. If you're about to get punched in the back of the head, your sixth sense just goes off. However, surely this costs you 2 ISP. And if you're up against a foe who is going to repeatedly attempt to strike you from behind, you know, say your foes have encircled you, and so one of them is always hitting you from behind, not only are you getting stabbed or punched or whatever in the back, but every time they hit you, in addition to physical damage, it's costing you internal strength points from your stupid fucking spider sense going off. Like, that guy, he's still behind you. He's still punching your back. You feel that guy punching your back? He's behind you. You're in danger. If this guy's got 4 attacks per melee, 4 melees per minute, that's 16 attacks, 16 times 2, you could be bleeding inner strength points at like 32 per minute in a fight with somebody who's staying behind you. You can't afford that shit in battle. So sixth sense, really a terrible proposition. Contrary to what you would expect in this fairly combat-oriented game, you don't want sixth sense, which I feel is nerfed, which I feel is weak, because I think the author realized how useful this power could potentially be in the Palladium system, which is like combat heavy. Anybody with a gun can do a ton of damage. So, you know, the author put the limiters on. Where the author didn't put the limiters on, and I think the dumbest thing on this page, is 2 powers that don't seem like Heroes Unlimited powers: speed reading and total recall. So speed reading is a simple power. It costs you 2 inner strength points, just like sixth sense, lasts for 3 minutes per level, and it just allows you to read really fast, 30 pages per minute, and you might half or quarter that rate for highly technical works. And your comprehension and retention is just the same as your normal reading ability would have it. Not a huge combat power, doesn't seem overpowered for 2 inner strength points. However, the total recall ability, also on this page, that's a real winner, much more of a winner than I think the author realized. This ability is permanent. It is always in effect. It lists an inner strength point cost of 2. I don't know exactly what that means for a permanent power. Maybe you permanently reduce your ISP score by that much. I don't know. The key thing is what it does. It's just what it says on the tin. Quote, the character remembers every word he reads or hears or everything he sees. Specific blocks of information can be recalled in perfect detail at will. Each block of information costs 3 ISP to recall in absolute detail. And it goes on to say that if all your ISP have been spent already, then you've got to roll percentile to see if you remembered exactly. Like, you have a 50-50 chance of getting everything, a 20% chance that you only get the basic concept of what you're recalling, and about a 30% chance that you forget the details, but you clearly understand the basics. Typically, you'll be able to scrounge up 3 ISP in your moment of need. Total recall applies to speed reading, however. So if you've got both of these powers, then anything you speed read is with you forever. And where this really matters, where this really counts, and where I think the author really did not consider how this fits in a campaign, is all the fucking downtime that these other character classes need. When you're a psionic, you don't have to go begging and scraping to your psionic master to teach you another psionic power, like wizards do. As we discussed in the magic section, if you're a wizard and you'd like to learn, you know, a fireball spell, you can't just retire to your sanctum, give it some thought, and come out slinging fireballs. At least not under the standard rules. There are some expedited rules. Under the standard rules, if you want that spell, you got to go seek out like some supernatural being or your ancient master, and you got to spend a long ass time in boring contemplation to prove that you have the maturity and responsibility. I'm sorry, to pretend you have the maturity and responsibility to learn the fireball spell. Likewise, we were in the hardware section. We were talking about how long it takes to build things. Gadgets that the team is really going to want from you, like if you're trying to build, you know, a Quinjet for the team, your big team vehicle or your big computer system for the team HQ, it's going to take months or maybe a year or 2 years of downtime. Maybe not all at once, but certainly you're going to need to take that much accumulated downtime before the project is over. So very likely, like for the character to be effective, you're going to have to talk to the rest of the group and say, hey guys, if you want that supercar, if you want that team jet, we just got to agree we're not going to do a lot of high stress crime fighting for like 8 to 12 months, and then we'll sort of pick up the campaign again then. And then the wizard and the team is like, okay, that's cool. I really do want that jet. Let me go hit up my ancient master for some wisdom and go live a humble life of contemplation for a year. When we come back, you'll have the jet. I'll have the fireball spell. We're good to go. Now we pan the camera over to unassuming Cindy the psychic, right? Just a sensitive psychic, just a pantsuit wearing, timid, minimal combat skills, Cindy the psychic, a psychic with sensitive powers, including total recall and speed reading. Do you know how much Cindy can fucking read and retain forever in a day at second level? 540 pages per hour, permanently retained. If you take a year off to build the team of Superjet at second level of the campaign, right? And that's what the hardware character spends their time doing over a year of downtime. And Cindy decides to just like hit the internet and go on a Wikipedia binge. In that year, Cindy could read and retain every English Wikipedia article for the rest of her life. That's a huge amount of information. And of course, in a campaign, you probably wouldn't do this. I mean, it'd be a neat trick. It'd be neat to say that you're spending your year of downtime doing this and then demand from the GM in every situation, if I can find information on Wikipedia out of character, then in character, I can instantly recall it. That'd be kind of fun. But for power gaming purposes, you wouldn't read all of Wikipedia. You don't need to know all that shit about Pokemon and the production of Star Trek episodes and barely notable athletes. What you would do is make yourself a wish list, a list of books and online documents that contain useful information. I'm thinking of indices of contact information, tech manuals, language learning resources, public city and county records, if you have a campaign that tends to stick around one place. That's a tremendous amount of useful information you could cram in. Not to mention a lot of skills. Like, I know there's more to skills than just memory retention, but a lot of information you'd otherwise have to make a skill roll for, you could just straight up memorize and always have at your fingertips. I mean, hit up some school yearbooks and just remember all those faces. And keep in mind too, it's not just like rote, you know, like it's not just a photographic memory. You do retain and understand all that you read because you've got speed reading as well as photographic memory. So surely this is going to give you bonuses to any kind of study that can be done from a book. Over the course of a year, a nice dirty trick would be to ask your GM how long it would take to learn a skill in downtime from a book, something you can learn without a teacher just from reading. With speed reading, you should be able to cut that to about a 60th, given the average reading rate that people have. Anyway, normally I try not to pick really good combinations of abilities as the dumbest thing on a page, but in this case, I think it's justified because what makes these so good is that this section does not envision the kind of downtime that the other sections require. If this really were just a game of fistfights and mecha combat and laser beams and stuff, then these powers would be good, but not great. But because other power categories absolutely demand copious downtime, the combination of these powers is way, way better than the author seems to realize. Cindy the Psychic is going to be rapidly approaching omniscience by the time the team builds its garage full of super vehicles, which is cool for Cindy and cool for you if you like to play Cindy the Psychic in a superhero game, which admittedly is really fun. But it's nonetheless, from a design perspective, the dumbest thing on this page. And I guess the honorary dumbest thing on this page is that the boring way to be a psychic turns out to be the best way to be a psychic in this instance, although I'm a fan of the boring way, as is so often the case, so I'm not offended. Today we're discussing page 309 of Heroes Unlimited. We're in the psionic abilities section still. We've been talking about psionic abilities for days now. We've been talking about healing abilities, physical abilities, sensitive abilities, and these are parlor tricks. These are, you know, because they come from other role-playing games, as we've discussed, like many of these come through Beyond the Supernatural. This is some spoon-bending shit. This is some geometrical shapes on flashcards, some motivational speaker coal walking, some bed of nails at the carnival bullshit so far. Not totally inappropriate to a superhero game, but it's minor psychic shit. Now, we're on to the super psionic powers. They start on this page. These are the big ones. These are psionic powers that make you want to put on some spandex and go fight or do crimes, or both. It's the 90s, be an anti-hero. If you want to wreck shit with your mind, this is the section for you. But even here, it's a mixed bag. And just to kind of set the tone as we move forward through this section, I want to take an opportunity right on this page to give you two examples of supersonic powers. One, which is bad, but good. And the other one, which is, you know, good in terms of character building, but is the absolute shit and is the dumbest thing on this page. This is one of those cases where the dumbest thing on a page is not, like, outrageous. It's not hilariously bad. This is not the Plan 9 from Outer Space of psychic powers. This is the Thor the Dark World of psionic powers. Just a dull slog. Just dull. Just a perfectly formed cube of shit. The very first supersonic power is advanced trance state. Now, all psionics can go into a trance. We talked about this before. All psychics can meditate. You meditate for 1 hour, you get 6 of your inner strength points back, and you get the equivalent of 2 hours of sleep. This is 3 times as fast at getting your ISP back as just regular sleep. So unlike a Dungeons & Dragons wizard who really wants to take a nap after they've thrown a lot of fireballs and want to throw a bunch more, you know, they need that nap in between to recharge. You don't want to sleep really between your fits of psychic fury. You want to meditate. Get yourself in that properly centered space for blowing up some heads with electrokinesis. Now, blowing up heads is fun. I think we can all agree. We're all role players here. But meditation itself is fairly dull. You just sit there in the traditional position of spiritual power, crisscross applesauce, and you do nothing. You just do nothing. And you recharge your points that you spend to do things later. It's delayed gratification for the power fantasy that is superhero role playing. So how depressing is it to take as one of your super psionic powers, one of your marquee powers, right? If you're the most powerful psionic class in the game, you get 3 super psionic powers to start. How boring is it to have one of them be, you can sit there and do nothing for even longer and even harder. You can fucking go hard at doing nothing. Harder and longer. You are the master of fucking crisscross applesauce if you've got advanced trance state for all the good it does you. You can sit there and do nothing for up to 8 hours per level of experience. So by 3rd level, we're up to a full day of sitting and doing nothing. It costs you 10 inner strength points to initiate, but then every hour of it, you're in an advanced do-nothing trance, and so you regain 12 inner strength points per hour instead of 6 inner strength points per hour. Note that this does mean you need to kind of prime the pump, because regular meditation doesn't cost any inner strength points. So if you need ISP back, if you've only got like an hour to spend on it, you know, if you're in the middle of the dungeon, so to speak, and you just need to barge into the next room, or if you're in between big fights and you're, you know, on the way in the team super jet and you're just chilling out, meditating on the way, you know, amping yourself up, you don't want to use advanced trance state. You'd net more ISP from regular meditation. You only want to bust out your advanced trance state, your master level crisscross applesauce, when you've got at least 2 hours to spend on just doing nothing, just meditation. At that point, you're actually netting more ISP than you would from regular meditation. And ISP is why you would do this, right? There are other effects of the advanced trance state. You do heal at the double rate, but really by the rules, that takes a full day. Natural healing rates are so slow anyway. Like, if the GM were generous and allowed you to heal HP or SDC after only 8 hours of sitting there doing nothing, and allowed being in a trance to stack with medical care. You know, you've got some understanding, psychic sensitive friends at the hospital who are willing to, you know, hook you up and tend you and everything while you sit there in the lotus position and boost your natural healing while they're tending to you. If the GM house rules that you can stack those two modifiers to your healing, 8 hours yields you like an extra 2 SDC or some ridiculously low number. It's like you're 48 hours of sitting there doing nothing before you're in the double digits of marginal SDC gain over regular medical care. So like, who cares? If you've got 2 days to chill out at the hospital, it doesn't really matter what level your crisscross applesauce game is at. You're fine. And if you're trying to heal up in a hurry to face a big bad, this is nothing. So really, you're just using this to get your ISP back. Now, the duration on this is 8 hours per level, which is way longer than you need. Once you hit like 3rd level, the duration on this is hours beyond what you'll ever need to recharge all of your ISP. The other alternative use of advanced trance state is to slow your metabolism down to fight poison or drugs in your system or to survive on very little air by shutting down your body's systems. So here's another thrilling option for one of your 3 major psionic abilities. You can effectively drop dead temporarily in a environment without enough air to support you, or in response to being, you know, hit with a poison dart in the neck, you can be like, aha, fortunately, I am a powerful psychic. Flump, collapse on the ground. And then, you know, assuming someone finds you and helps you, who has useful abilities, You could go for days doing nothing and be just fine. I mean, imagine the thrill of getting one over on your damnable foes when they hit you with a poison dart and you fall to the ground in a self-induced trance state and play dead for, by mid-levels, days on end, waiting for someone to be able to help you. That'll teach him to fuck with a master of crisscross applesauce. You think you can put me in a fucking coma? I'll put myself in a coma. You can't fire me, I quit. At life. This is the most boring power. And you know, if it's a physical power, fair enough. Like, fair fucks to the poor soul who decides, I got nothing better to spend my minor psionic power slot on than fucking playing dead and doing some downtime management, because that's what this is. This is a downtime management power. You don't really use this in like a fight or a tense situation. It takes 2 hours to even be of any use. It takes over a day to be of any use for healing, and you really need to be getting medical care on top of it for it to be effective at all. It helps you get your ISP back, but only over hours-long stretches of time. So this is not for action scenes. This is for downtime. This is some bookkeeping bullshit, and it's only necessary because of the wonky way that ISP scales. And I can't believe I'm going to even say this. It's so boring, I can't even believe I have it in my notes. But here's why this power exists and why you might take it, despite its soporific qualities. You only increase your ISP pool at a rate of 10 per level, assuming you're a natural psionic. Latent psychics get even fewer ISP per level. So by far, the biggest chunk of inner strength points you get, and the majority of your ISP up until about level 11, after most campaigns end, is your starting ISP, which is highly random. The average you'll get, assuming you roll an average stat, and then you get an average bonus, then you add an average random modifier, is 110. But your ISP to start can range from 40 to like 180. But meditation regains ISP so slowly. Remember, like 6 per hour. That by around 5th level, if you've got an average amount of ISP, it's taken you a really long time to recharge your psychic power after a fight. It's taken you like 26 hours of meditation, which means you've got to ditch a whole adventuring day, right? 13 hours is like a long sleep. Like, you got to sleep in because you blew your wad yesterday in psychic battle against your foes. So today, you know, you get up at noon, you eat a big pancake breakfast, it's afternoon by the time you start your day, now you're good to go. That's advanced trance state. If you've not got advanced trance state, then you lose the whole day. You've got to be sleeping, meditating, engaging in restorative crisscross applesauce for 26 hours. It's slowing the whole game down. And if you're in one of those campaigns where the GM is like tracking days on the calendar, you know, what are you guys doing on your Thursday? What are you doing on your Friday? You don't want every other day to be crisscross applesauce on the calendar. So tragically, when it comes time to pick another super psionic power, you know, one of your, what, you get one every other level, one of your maybe four you get over the course of a campaign, four new exciting powers, one of those four slots, you're like, fuck it, I'm taking advanced trance state so I can meditate harder, and I guess I'll just wait two more levels, aka several months, before I get a new power, a new real power. Dull, dull, dull. But you know what? This show isn't about negativity. Let me cap off by giving you another power on this page. Here's a little bonus content for you. A power that shows how it's done. Biomanipulation, aka the evil eye. Quote, the psychic is able to induce physical trauma to the nervous system of others by sheer force of will and psychic energy. This psi power is often known as, quote, the evil eye. Here's what this fucking power allows you to do. It allows you to blind someone, to deafen someone, to paralyze someone completely, to stun and confuse someone, which is totally redundant with paralyzing them, to tissue manipulate them so that they itch or feel hot or cold, all of which effects are just annoying and give you tiny little penalties. So if you think it's funny to make someone itch, this is your jam. Putting those powers of the mind to real good use. Getting your jollies making people's balls itch. I love biomanipulation. But Chris, you say, doesn't the rules text say that you can use biomanipulation on someone if you know their exact location, even if you can't see them? And isn't that kind of fucked up for, quote, the evil eye, that you don't even need to see someone? Yeah, sure it is. Hey, Chris, aren't some of these abilities redundant with the others? Like, who needs to stun someone when you can paralyze someone? Why would you ever do that? Yeah, sure. Isn't it kind of silly to have the power to make people itch? Isn't that, like, more of a prank power than a functional ability? Sure, sure it is. Chris, isn't it true that these penalties don't make sense? Like the fact that being deaf reduces your initiative, but being blind doesn't. Because apparently, if you can't see what the fuck is happening around you, you're still Johnny on the spot, ready for action. But if you can't hear the person visibly charging at you, you just stand there like an idiot until they pull you over. Because apparently only the ears are connected to the reflexes center of the brain. Hey, that's all true. Nonetheless, the evil eye is fun. Nonetheless, the evil eye gives you the impression that what you get to do is raise your eyebrow at someone, give them a big old stink eye, and then they go blind, or they go deaf, or their balls itch, all of which are fun options to use in the course of your campaign. My point is this. Despite all the problems with biomanipulation, it is a fun power. It would be fun to hit third level as a psychic and be like, this one. I learned the evil eye. Balls beware, my powers know no bounds. You got some interesting tactical options, you got great flavor, you got two fun names. The evil eye is like a fun hex-style curse name, and biomanipulation is a fun psionic name. It's a fun thing to say when you're explaining to the other superheroes how you blinded that guy. It was a simple matter of biomanipulation. I manipulated his biological eyes with my brain and fucked them all up. Psychics love to explain shit like that. This is a fun power. Despite its flaws, it's still good. One of the best super psionic powers, in my opinion. Advanced trance state, useful. The rules work. No glaring errors in its writing or execution. Shouldn't be necessary. The ISP recovery rules should be better. They should scale so that you don't need to blow a power spot on this. But given that those rules are bad, this power is a good fix. Nonetheless, a stupid power. The dumbest thing on this page, it's just not fun to hit third level and have your new psychic power be that you're better at downtime management. So advanced trance state can fuck right off. Today we're discussing page 310 of Heroes Unlimited. We're still in the super psionics section. We're discussing super psionic powers, big, badass, fuck off psionic powers, vast powers of the mind. This page has got some doozies as psionic powers go. Electrokinesis, zap people with electricity. Empathic transmission, make people feel things like despair or sorrow or love or trust, which, as we've discussed in the past, if you play your cards right, that's like the only superpower you need. Group mind block, protect the whole group from psionics. This is how you keep earning that sweet Avengers paycheck. That's job security. And hydrokinesis, the power to control water, which is, of course, extremely useful. I can't really find fault with the basic powers on this page. All of these deserve to be here. Unlike yesterday, where we were able to pick out advanced trance state as like, this doesn't really deserve to be a super psionic power. These are all solid options that would make great additions to a psychic character. They are impressive powers of the mind. The dumbest thing on this page goes more to how the rules are written. And in a broader way, it goes to the kind of the incoherent design philosophy of Palladium games. I like engaging with listeners on Twitter. One of the conversations I try not to interject myself into very much is the recurring discussion about how you're supposed to use the Palladium rules. One thing that people will often bring up is that Kevin Sambita himself runs Palladium in a very fast and loose way. And this is consistent with a design philosophy where the game is not really meant to give you everything you need. As a GM, you're meant to bring a lot of that yourself. You make decisions on the fly. You make rulings. You make the rules fit together. You improvise. Just because the book doesn't say something exists doesn't mean it doesn't exist, right? Just because it doesn't give you a rule, you don't need to be spoon-fed. You can make up a rule on the spot. What do I roll to see if I notice the trapdoor? Well, there's no perception roll or stat in this game. Maybe there's a skill that's relevant, but nobody here has it. Does that mean they have a 0%? No, just, get a d20 and, it's a big trapdoor, but you're blind in one eye and you're kind of distracted. But you also did fall through that other trapdoor once. You're kind of like, roll a 12. Roll a 12 or better, you see the trapdoor. That kind of thing, right? Rulings, not rules. That's the argument for how you're supposed to run Palladium. And some people will stretch that argument to say, that's why many of the things in this game that I'll point out as flaws aren't really flaws, because the game isn't meant to tell you what to do. It's counting on you to decide what to do in all the various situations that can arise in the campaign. And that's all fair enough. I mean, people can have their different preferences, but if batteries aren't included, batteries aren't included, right? But here's my thing. This sure as hell reads like a game that wants to tell you exactly how to do things. It definitely sends the message, if you read the text, that it's gonna give you very specific rules for every little thing. And there are few better examples of that than the Sense Chemical Impurities subpower of hydrokinesis. Today's going to be a short episode. I just want you to hold firmly in mind the idea that Palladium is a fast and loose rule system that is about giving you broad strokes and then allowing the GM to do all the fiddly bits, right? Make all the spur of the moment decisions, decide what dice to roll. The game is just going to give you like overall broad sweep guidance. That's the value you're getting from Palladium games. Now listen to this. Quote, sense chemical impurities. The psychic can sense whether or not water is polluted, drugged, or contains other substances. The exact nature of the additive or pollutant may be unknown, but he will know that it is not completely natural. When sensing water, First roll to determine the purity of the water. Crystal clear and drinkable, dirty but drinkable, or fouled and undrinkable slash hazardous. So already we're into order of operations. In truly a rules-light game, or in truly an old-school shoot-from-the-hip, trust-the-GM style of game, all this power would say is, sense chemical impurities. This character can sense impurities in water, and done. But no, here, there's a procedure. Kevin Sambit is about to take you on a journey through the wonderful world of fouled water. Number one, roll to determine purity of water. Three categories, crystal clear and drinkable, drinkable but dirty, fouled and undrinkable. Your base skill to determine which of those three categories water fits into is 70% plus 2% per each additional level of experience. All right, quote, this will identify whether it is a chemical slash drug, not deadly but will cause a reaction if drunk, or poison, a deadly or harmful toxin if swallowed. So we're drawing a distinction here between a chemical slash drug and a poison, notwithstanding the fact that many poisons are chemicals and or drugs. Because, as we all know, from a quick look at the dictionary that exists in Kevin Sambita's brain and nowhere else, a chemical slash drug is a thing that won't kill you, whereas a poison is a thing that will kill you. Now, I could be impolite, I could be a boor, I could be a real churl here, and point out that the two categories of non-deadly substances that will cause a reaction if you drink them, and substances that will harm you if swallowed, are in fact not mutually exclusive. That's a Venn diagram, right? To which the inveterate Palladium defender will say, but that's common sense, it's for the GM to work out. To which I will respond, okay, but then why am I reading this? Like, what, we've just set up two categories with definitions that are not their dictionary definitions of different categories of water and how it can be corrupted that in fact overlap and don't work and need common sense adjudication anyway. But anyway, it turns out that the base skill to determine the nature of the water corruption, assuming that I was able to detect the impurity of the water in the first place, is 35% plus 5% per each additional level of experience. How these numbers were arrived at, why the author felt the need to split this into two distinct categories with two distinct percentages, I really don't know. The epitome, though, of the persnicketiness of these rules is the range. And I apologize because, like, this is a thin punchline, but it just made me laugh when I read it. So, like, by longstanding tradition, if the thing I read on the page makes me laugh, it's going in the fucking episode. So here it is. The range of sense chemical impurities, quote, self, water touches the lips or 6 inches from the lips. Here's how you know that you are taking your goofy-ass role-playing game too seriously. It's the moment when you are calculating range specifically from your character's lips. I want you to consider that, like, these rules don't just appear out of nowhere. These rules had to be written. Someone considered, at what range can a hydrokinetic, a psychic with a special affinity for water, who can sense the nature of water and impurities in same, at some point, an author had to decide, at what range can a hydrokinetic determine that there is a chemical impurity in water? Can he do it to a glass of water sitting on the table before him? No. Impossible. It would strain credulity in this, a thinking man superhero game, to suggest that a psychic could just look at a glass of water on the table before him and determine its chemical composition. How would that even work? Could he perhaps dip a finger into it? Feel the water? No. No, of course not. The finger has nothing to do with the psychic ability to sense the chemical composition of water. You fucking imbecile. You simpleton. As we all know, the psychic ability to sense the chemical impurities in water is seated, invariably, in the lips of the psychic. And it is from those lips that we must measure the precise 6-inch range of this ability. Type, 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 so mote it be, send it to the printer. I am highly sympathetic to people who are forgiving of Heroes Unlimited. God knows that I am more forgiving of Heroes Unlimited than it often deserves. And I am open to a wide array of interpretations of this game and why this game is or is not good, or does not work. But henceforth, with the evidence before us, 6 inches from our figurative fucking lips, do not tell me that I'm just misunderstanding this game because I don't realize that it wants to leave everything up to interpretation, that it doesn't want to spoon-feed me the details of adjudicating mundane tasks. Don't you fucking tell me that when I've got a rule in the goddamn rulebook telling me that I gotta measure 6 inches from my lips to the cup before I can determine what's in the fucking water I'm about to drink. This game requires rulings, true. No doubt it does. But it also offers rules. It offers rules The way that a meth head at 3 a.m. in front of the McDonald's offers unsolicited opinions about the true mission of Jesus Christ. It doesn't just offer rules, it fucking offers rules. And those rules are dumb. You just gotta admit it. You just gotta fucking admit it. Because we can forgive it. It's fine. Like, it's a book full of fun ideas with rules that don't work. It's okay. I guess that's what I'm trying to get at today on this page of good ideas. It's okay. You know, like my few listeners who feel like they need to defend that, like, the Palladium system really does work and there's not a problem here. Just, like, bring it in, guys. Like, let's hug it out. It's fine. It's okay. The rules say that if you're a mentalist who specializes in water, that you need to float water 6 inches in front of your lips where your psychic powers are stored before you can detect shit from it. And that's dumb, and you can just ignore it. Or not, as the scene demands. I mean, if it's funny, if a diplomat is maybe going to be poisoned, and the psychic has to surreptitiously try to get the diplomat's water within 6 inches of their own lips to check it out, then by all means use this rule. Just, you know, let's embrace what we're doing here. Let's find the power in our own metaphorical lips to detect the infusion of nonsense in these pages that sit before us. Today we're discussing page 311 of Heroes Unlimited. We're still in the super psionic ability section where we talk about big, important, powerful psionic powers. Psionic powers you can use to fuck up criminals, fight for justice, save the world, turn away the alien invaders, but there are limits. Listen, heavy lies the head with the oversized brain. As a psychic, you have a responsibility to use your powers in an ethical fashion. And that's what I want to talk about today. It's like a PSA. It's a helpful reminder from the author about how to be a hero. And it comes under the hydrokinesis supersonic power. Yesterday, we talked about the hydrokinetics ability to detect impurities in water, provided that water is very close to their lips, which are the seat of their power. That's good for protecting yourself. That's self-defense. Ethically, you're in the clear. You may, however, need to use your powers to fight crime. You may need to use your powers to fight for the rights of every man. Fight for what's right. Fight for your life. And that's where it's just important that you behave like a hero. Now, as we've discussed before, Heroes Unlimited has an alignment system that is a little wonky about heroism. You really kind of have to dig in to see the game's implicit idea of, you know, who's good and who's bad and who's a hero and who's not. What's important in life, like following laws and protecting property, and what's not important in life, like refraining from torturing people. But if you found these rules to be a little hazy, a little dodgy about what a real hero is, now we really get some bedrock to stand on. It comes under the water spout ability. Quote, making water leap, seemingly with a life of its own, can be startling to others and a great distraction. Hurling normal water or a cool drink into somebody's face slash eyes will momentarily blind and surprise the individual, causing him slash her to lose initiative and one attack that melee. So far, so good. You're fighting crime. You need to get the jump on somebody. You're looking for a gentle way to do it. You know, let's say you're a true American hero. You are Old Faithful, America's most beloved water-based psychic superhero. You do all kinds of press stuff. You know, you take Make-A-Wish kids to Yellowstone Park. Every year, you go to patriotic events at the reflecting pool in front of the Lincoln Monument. A real classic stand-up principled superhero. Old Faithful. When you're fighting crime, by all means, splash somebody's lemonade in their eyes. Because of course you fight criminals who drink a lot of lemonade, right? You're from the golden age. It was a simpler time back then. Hardened criminal robbing a bank? No problem. A little splash of water from the aquarium in the bank lobby into his eyes. He drops his gun. He flails around. You run over there. One solid right hook down on the ground. Once again, the assets of good old-fashioned American capitalism are saved by Old Faithful. But that's not all you can do with the power of hydrokinesis. Quote, hurling hot or boiling water on the body, especially the crotch or exposed skin, will have the same results. Hurling boiling water in the face is horribly painful. I just want to point out that emphasis is not mine. That emphasis is in the text. Boiling water and face are italicized. So the only way to read it is, quote, hurling boiling water in the face is horribly painful, causing 2d4 damage, loss of initiative, loss of all attacks for 1d6 melee rounds, and temporary blindness, minus 10 to strike, parry, and dodge. Sounds like somebody just spilled some boiling water on himself in this Ambita household, I'm just saying. Because that's the worst fucking blindness we've run into. Spoilers for future episodes, being blind has extremely variable penalties in this game, and this is the worst fucking blindness I've come across. I feel like Kevin Zambita accidentally spilled his own tea on his head on the way to the word processor before he wrote this. And he was like, you take minus 10 to everything when you get boiling water on your face. Ah, it was ripped from the headlines of the Zambita family newsletter. Anyway, that's the thing you can do. You can hurl boiling water at someone's face or someone's exposed skin or their crotch. It is, quote, horribly painful, does some damage, they lose their initiative, they lose all their attacks for multiple rounds, 1d6 rounds. You roll a 4 on that, you're out of the action for one full minute while somebody's beating the shit out of you for a full minute. And you're like, oh, water on my crotch. I wish I could mount some kind of defense to this pummeling, but crotch. However, this is not a tactic Old Faithful would use, needless to say. But we're going to say it anyway. Quote, characters of a good alignment will not hurl boiling water in the face unless in life or death circumstances. Life or death, that's the standard. If you're Old Faithful, then your foes know this about you. Okay, could this be used against you? Sure it could. That's the price of moral purity. If one of your old foes breaks into the Spout Cave, deep beneath Yellowstone Park, where your young ward Splashy lives, and grabs him and puts him in a heel hook and is like, Old Faithful, I've spent the last 10 years of my life in prison because of your infernal meddling. Now I shall take my revenge by snapping the precious tender ankle of your young ward Splashy. And the two of them, let's say, are in the kitchen where you've just put on the kettle to boil some tea because you're an old man and that's what you drink. You're a hydrokinetic. This is a tactical error on your old foe's part. You could just hurl this boiling water at this guy and you could get Splashy off the hook. Get him out of there scot-free with his tender ankle unsnapped. But is that what you do? No, because you're a hero. You say, listen, my worthy foe, you know that my code prohibits me from pouring boiling water upon the face of any human being, regardless of their deeds. So if you have to snap that ankle, my old friend, that's what you have to do. And Splashy's like, no, no, Old Faithful, save me. Like, no, Splashy, I could save your ankle, but the damage to your character would be irreparable if you were to see me using boiling water for anything less than a life or death circumstance. How would I face America if I poured boiling water on someone merely because they were assaulting a child? Because Splashy's like 12 years old, because of course he is. It's the golden age. It's the fucking 1930s. Endanger children. Make them wear short pants. Smoke in comic books. Just whatever you do, don't you fucking pour boiling water on somebody. It hurts too much. It hurts too... Could you shoot them with fire? Sure you could. Of course you could, because the Human Torch does it all the time. Shoot them with a machine gun? Not only is that allowed, it's encouraged. I mean, wartime or anytime. Like pizza rolls. When Kevin Sabita's writing the rules, it can be wartime anytime. You shoot up that supervillain's henchman with blazing hot lead, just not with blazing hot water, not boiling water. It's distasteful. A hero would turn to firearms, America's weapon. Come on. Anyway, I've babbled about this enough. The dumbest thing on this page is that of all the places to draw the line for ethical behavior in this game, where you've got heroes fucking torturing villains, you've got people using love potions that make other people commit suicide, you've got mind control, you've got egregious violence, you've got hails of gunfire, burning people with plasma, crushing people with robots. Of all of that, the one thing that a hero would never do is put boiling water on someone's face. Not unless it were life or death. Old Faithful! Old Faithful! It's the Grizzly Liberation Front. They say unless all the bears are freed from Yellowstone National Park, they'll sever my spine. No, Splashy. I'm sorry, Splashy. There's nothing I... But Old Faithful! I put some water on to boil. I was clever, Old Faithful. I told them my last request was a cup of tea. All you need to do is splash their faces. Splashy, listen. I'm ashamed of you, Splashy. I know that you're risking paralysis here, but I've told you time and time again, unless it's life or death, I shall never splash boiling water upon the face of however heinous a criminal. Old Faithful, please, I want to walk. I love to dance. Splashy. George Washington would be ashamed of you, Splashy. All right, I gotta end this episode. This is a fun podcast to make. Thank you guys for listening to it. Join me tomorrow as we discuss more old-fashioned comic book bullshit on MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. This has been Mega Dumbcast. New episodes drop every day except for Sundays, when all the previous week's episodes drop in one big chunk for your binging convenience. Contact or check out the show wherever you want. It is Mega Dumbcast on Twitter, Instagram, Podbean, your favorite podcatcher, etc., etc. And if you like my tiny little podcast, consider giving me a tiny bit of money at ko-fi.com/megadumb. That is ko-fi.com/megadumb. MDC, Palladium Books, Heroes Unlimited, and all associated trademarks are property of Kevin Sambita. This season's theme song is To the Top by Midair Machine, whose work you can find at freemusicarchive.org/music/askagain. That's ask again, two words with a space in between. Dumbheads, I will catch you next time.